Vice Chair Antoni, Ranking Member Antonio.
Here.
Senators Johnson.
Here.
Roegner.
Here.
Romanchuk.
Here.
Thomas.
Here.
All right, having a quorum, if the members would look over the minutes. Is there any additions or corrections? Seeing the minutes will stand as written. First on the agenda was the governor's appointment. We're going to table that for now and have some further conversation. And I would encourage the members to contact the governor's appointment if you have any concerns, and we'll bring that up to the next committee meeting. First hearing, House Bill 371, Representatives Schmidt and Denson. Representative, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee members, for being here, and Vice Chairman Antoni. It's a cold day, but it's an important day, because I'm giving my proponent testimony for House Bill 371 to increase breast cancer screening accessibility and early detection to patients. Mammography is the first line of breast cancer detection. We know that. And years ago when I was here, I fought insurance companies to make sure they were appropriately covering breast cancer screenings. Today, I'm here again because the fight continues. I'm here with Representative Denson to introduce a bill that will utilize modern technology in detecting breast cancer. I became aware of this need for this legislation when a very close friend of mine found out she had stage 4 breast cancer. In 2014, her mammogram showed she had dense breasts. What the images failed to show was a small tumor hidden inside. 4 years later, the tumor grew large enough to be detected with 20-year-old technology. The cancer also spread to other parts of her body. Using modern technology coupled with additional screenings would have caught this tumor at its earliest stage. The radical surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation more than likely would have been unnecessary. House Bill 371 allows all women to have tomosynthesis during all visits, which is an improvement in mammography technology. Women of any age will be eligible for a mammogram every year and not limited based on age, risk factors, or multi-year waiting periods. If dense breasts are detected, they will receive an updated letter describing the underlying risks that they may have and suggesting they may need additional screening to clearly detect breast cancer. Digital breast tomosynthesis, which is like a mammogram but provides better quality images for more accurate diagnosis, is included in the definition of a mammogram. This bill also ensures that women who are diagnosed with dense breast tissue will have full access to primary and supplemental breast cancer screenings and be made more aware of the risks they may have. Supplemental screenings are any additional screening deemed necessary by their health care provider in accordance with the American College of Radiology, including MRIs, ultrasound, or molecular breast imaging. Women and their primary caregivers will decide what additional screenings are necessary, not the insurance companies. Commercial insurance companies and Medicaid will be required to cover the cost of these supplemental screenings for adult women who have dense breast tissue, have had a prior history of breast cancer, or have an ancestral or genetic predisposition to breast cancer as determined by a healthcare provider. 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer this year. 75% will have had no prior history of breast cancer in their family. They will begin that history in their family. Women with dense breasts will have a greater risk of breast cancer. We know early detection is the key to survival. Early detection reduces the cost to fight and hopefully cure the breast cancer. More importantly, we know all too well when we have had a family member touched with breast cancer, the human cost. to their families, to their employers, to their society, to their self-worth and dignity when a woman has to fight for her life. We know it is enormous. The House passed this bill with overwhelming bipartisan support. We have advanced technology to identify breast cancer at its earliest stage, and this bill will make sure we are using it. Representative Denson must be held up. I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
We have his as written a testimony, so I'm not sure if he's planning to be here. So,
okay.
Any questions for the witness? Senator Donnie. All right, Antonio.
Thank you. There's a lot of that going around. That's all right. Thanks so much for being here, Representative. And I really appreciate your dedication to this issue. You've reached out to me and talked to me a little bit about this bill. I think it was a few months ago, but just in looking over the summary from our staff, I mean, it's very impressive the amount of people that came to testify either in writing or in person in support of this. I think one of the areas that I think is interesting to me is that the Office of Medicaid already covers this. Am I correct?
I couldn't get clarity on it, and you may be correct on that.
Okay, it looks like they're covering to a certain degree. Can you speak a little bit more about, totally supportive of this bill, and I very much appreciate you bringing it to us. Can you talk a little bit more about the difficulty that someone is having right now, whether it's your friend or other folks that came and testified, in terms of why is this legislation needed?
Through the chair, Senator, I've had so many of my friends tell me that when they go and they want to get a more involved breast cancer screening, their doctors have a hard time getting insurance companies to pay attention to it. I would love to say that I actually wrote the words to this bill, but I did not. I am not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, but I know who to ask. And so through the radiology department at the University of Cincinnati and the breast cancer department, three wonderful doctors helped write this bill. And all three of them shared their frustration when they sit hours on the phone with an insurance company who says, we don't feel you need this additional screening. Right now, yesterday, and I haven't called her, a very dear friend of mine is probably going to be in the fight of her life, and yet a screening showed on Thursday, she needed additional screening. They wanted to get it immediately, and they're still fighting to get the additional screening. Friday, it didn't happen. She was scheduled for it yesterday, and I failed to call her. She didn't get it Monday because the insurance company still hasn't cleared it. That's the kind of problem we're in. And she needs to get the MRI. In her case, they saw a suspicious tumor last year. They took out the breasts. She has saline, which apparently is leaking, but they showed a tumor. And she needs that MRI to clarify what it is. And now that was Thursday, and as of yesterday, I haven't heard whether she got it or not. I know Monday she didn't get the additional screening because that doctor is fighting.
And a follow-up? Thank you. And time is of the essence, am I right? I mean, part of the reason why my belief is you brought this bill to us, as well as what you've just said, is that time is of the essence, and to have it be very clear what our insurance companies and our providers are covering in the case of someone with dense breast tissue. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator, absolutely. If you can imagine what it looks like, how to find a tumor in a dense breast. We've all driven down the highway and we're approaching fog. And you can see that car in front of you. It's a little hazy, but you can see it. But you keep driving into the fog and suddenly there's a Mack truck in front of you. That's what it's like with dense breasts. The denser the breast, the harder it is to see, because dense breasts show a white film inside the breast, and the tumor is white, so it's like finding a snowflake in a snowstorm. You can't see it. The tomosynthesis will help in the fact that when 20-year-old technology smashes the breast, and then they look at a smashed breast, tomosynthesis then slices it like a loaf of bread, so you can pull it out and try to see it. But even in a dense fog or a snowstorm, you still can't see the clarity that an MRI will show. And that's why it's important for the caregiver, the radiologist, to say, I think we need a better look. I'm really not sure about this, because that's what happened with my friend Michelle. They thought they saw something in 2014. They followed up with 2015, 16, and 17 and didn't see anything. And then in 18, it was big. And she's fighting for her life.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Senator Thomas?
No.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you, and thank you, Senator Johnson, my senator.
That'll end the first hearing on House Bill 371. Next up, the third hearing on substitute House Bill 193. First up for proponent, Laura Miller.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman Antoni, Ranking Member Antonio, members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to be here to provide supporting testimony for Substitute House Bill 193 on behalf of both the Ohio Council of Retail Merchants and our pharmacy members and the National Association of Chain Drug Stores. We are appreciative of Representatives Catrona and Pavliga for their sponsorship of this important bill. Although the COVID-19 pandemic has drawn some attention away from the opioid epidemic, it is still a major public health crisis and will continue to be so after the pandemic has passed. We applaud the bill sponsors for recognizing the valuable impact that mandating e-prescribing of controlled substances, or EPCS, can have not only on prescription diversion, fraud, and addiction, but also on increasing patients' adherence to their medication regimens to improve health outcomes overall. Electronic prescribing is already a well-established practice nationally, including in Ohio. I know all my physicians that I see use e-prescribing. The federal law mandating EPCS for prescriptions for Medicare patients went into effect January 1st of 2021. According to SureScripts, as of December 2021, 83.9% of Ohio prescribers have electronic prescribing software that is approved for controlled substance prescribing. While these are promising statistics, there is room for further improve the rate of e-prescribing, particularly as it relates to controlled substances. As of October 2021, only 68% of Ohio's prescribers were actively using these approved EPCS systems to prescribe controlled substances, compared to 73.5% nationally. To date, approximately 35 states have followed the lead of the federal government and updated their laws to require EPCS in certain circumstances. Community pharmacies and pharmacists support policies that promote the use of electronic prescribing to transmit prescription information between prescribers and pharmacists, and know that the use of this technology will improve safety and security in the prescribing process. For controlled substances, electronic prescribing adds new dimensions of safety and security, as prescribers can more easily track the controlled substance prescriptions that a patient has received. When used, e-prescribing practices improve patient care and outcomes by eliminating handwriting errors. According to a study conducted at Johns Hopkins Medication Outpatient Pharmacy, 89% of handwritten prescriptions failed to meet best practice guidelines or were missing information that would otherwise be prompted by an e-prescribing system. By comparison, not a single prescription in that study issued electronically contained these types of errors. In addition to decreasing the number of handwritten errors, e-prescribing tools also enable clinical decision-making at point of care. When electronic prescribing is part of a healthcare provider's electronic health record system, prescriptions can be checked for interactions with patient medications, health conditions, and allergies. Furthermore, e-prescribing practices serve to improve medication adherence. As e-prescriptions are sent directly to the patient's pharmacy of choice, this technology allows healthcare providers to monitor and improve patient first fill adherence, as patients are more likely to fill prescriptions that are sent electronically to their pharmacy. Adoption of Substitute House Bill 193 will enhance healthcare providers' utilization of this technology and foster prescriber adoption. This will help to ensure that EPCS will lead to the virtual elimination of prescription fraud. Again, we extend our appreciation to the bill's sponsors and to this committee for recognizing the unique opportunity to help eliminate prescription fraud and errors while improving medication adherence. Thank you for your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Senator Johnson.
Thank you for your testimony and for bringing this in a highlighted fashion to us from your perspective. Your testimony cites a study by Johns Hopkins. Do you have any other studies that lead us in the same direction? And are there any studies that actually are contrary in nature?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Johnson, I don't have that offhand, but I can certainly get that to you through the chair.
Yeah,
I would very much like to see a broader scope of studies. I'm just particularly upset anymore about studies because when we talk about studies, we always have a study that backs what we're talking about, and I'm the same way. But there are so many studies out there, and people tend to focus on one thing, and we're talking about something as significant as this. I'd like to see a broader amount, and if we could get that to the committee, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, Senator. Thank you.
Any other questions? I'll ask you one. You quoted that 83% of providers in the state have the ability to do this. What do we do with the other 17? They just stop?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why the bill would be helpful, be a requirement, not a suggestion. If you're a Medicare provider, obviously you already have to utilize e-prescribing for the opioids. However, if you're not a Medicare prescriber, obviously you don't have that same requirement. So we just think that that would be a better adherence if it was a requirement.
No, I understand. I'll just, you know, there's a concern in rural Ohio that does not have broadband, and number two, the cost to some of these providers of an electronic medical records to do this, is that going to be a burden that we can overcome? I understand the objective to kind of push them in that direction, so.
But. Mr. Chairman, there are exceptions included in the bill to address those kind of circumstances.
Okay. Any other questions?
Good to see you. Thanks for your testimony. Well, to follow along with what the chair was just asking about, does this bill or are there other places where resources are available for folks who don't have access right now to the technology?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Antonio, as I mentioned, I do not have access to that information, but I would certainly be happy to do the research. I can contact Surescripts. I'm sure they can help me with that information.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Ernie Boyd from Ohio Pharmacy Association.
Chairman Huffman, Vice Chair Antoni, Ranking Member Antonio, and members of the Senate Health Committee. I am Ernest Boyd, Executive Director of the Ohio Pharmacists Association. The OPA is pleased to support HB 193, which will significantly reduce the problem of forged prescriptions. The primary drugs that have been the object of forged prescriptions have been Schedule II medications, which includes the strongest narcotics. The forgers have been amazingly good at creating illegitimate prescription. This legislation will require that Schedule II drugs shall be prescribed using electronic means with a few reasonable exceptions. It is far more difficult for prescriptions to be created illegitimately using the electronic transmission process. The strategy has been utilized in many other states, with approximately half of the states already passing similar legislation. There also is a federal government requirement for mandatory prescribing of Schedule II through IV drugs in the Medicare program, so it's not a new concept. We believe it will be effective in Ohio to further reduce the availability of unprescribed narcotics and other abuse drugs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
And Tony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. So you're saying that it'll lower the number of fraudulent prescriptions, but what protections are in this bill to prevent the hacking of the e-prescribing system, cybersecurity being a big risk?
Through the chair, Senator Antani, there are none in this bill. Most of our medical systems have been good at protecting from hacking for the singular reason of HIPAA violations and the huge fines that can occur, as we've seen in the past, to some of the major chains and others. So I do not know the physician systems, but my understanding is that the HIPAA law that was passed has put an onus on the companies who are making these systems to make them certainly not foolproof, not hacker-proof, but close. So you've hit it.
So would it then be safe to say that there is no requirement for cybersecurity in this bill, and thereby we really can't speak to whether this will decrease fraudulent prescriptions?
Through the chair, Senator, my idea of fraudulent prescriptions comes from my own practice when I was a real pharmacist, and the forgers were so good that they'd sit outside our pharmacy, and more recently my wife's pharmacy in South Charleston, writing these scripts, and in one case they had memorized the handwriting of the physician to the extent that they could actually forge it such that a forging professional couldn't testify. Those are the kinds of problems we were having. To my way of thinking, yes, hackers could get in and do something, but for a local person who's trying to get drugs quickly, it's going to be a lot harder to get into the physician office. So you are correct. If they can figure out the hacking piece, it's probably going to be the same.
Another question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They will figure out the hacking piece. My second question is in regards to cost. Some of my colleagues addressed it. What will the cost be to a provider who doesn't have an e-prescription system?
Through the chair, Senator Antani, the ultimate cost, I guess, would be to buy one of these prescribing systems and electronic medical records, if that's the direction they go. You do have exceptions in here if they have broadband issues. Could they then say that we don't have good broadband in town, so I'm not buying a system, so I'll keep writing them on paper? I think that'd be a legitimate excuse, but you have hit a problem that it is going to be an expense, especially for single practice physicians and other prescribers.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we don't know what the cost is, but we now know it will be a government mandate that costs private business money. You know, my last question is, you know, your association has spent the last few years sort of, you know, running this message of you know, cost putting, you know, pharmacies out of business, right? Mom and pop pharmacies out of business. So why now are you in proponent of a law that would increase costs for other businesses?
Through the chair, Senator, interestingly, other than buying the initial equipment, the pharmacy's having to pay for this. When this idea first popped out of e-prescribing, I was chairman of a committee with OSMA and our association 10 years ago, where we were talking against e-prescribing because at least 30% were coming through wrong. There are many problems with e-prescribing, but the physicians were pushing the wrong buttons. They'd see Ampicillin 250, push the button, but it was actually an IV that was being ordered instead of a caps. We had a lot of problems. I don't get as many calls from pharmacists, but the pharmacy is paying per prescription when these come in. So it actually has increased costs to our system. I'm not trying to increase costs on physicians. Matter of fact, if I had my druthers, I might say, let's split it with them. But, you know, I don't have my druthers, and so it's just subtracted from our prescription reimbursement.
Anything else?
Okay, thank you for your testimony. I guess my question is, I know when we say electronically, in today's technological world, we're talking about sending it via your cell phone or something of that nature. But what happens, most pharmacies, whether you are high-end pharmacies or you are just a mom-and-pop pharmacist, they have fax machines. Now, would that be considered electronically sending it as well?
Through the chairman, Senator, in this particular legislation, I believe it's driving toward using the computer and sending it rather than faxing. There are exemptions that DEA has made over the years for faxing, but I don't believe this legislation has an exemption that I remember, so I apologize if I'm wrong, but okay. I don't think that's in there.
Thank you. Just follow up. No, that came to my attention thinking electronically, and they've been sending faxes for a long time. Okay.
We'll get a clarification for that for you. Any other questions? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd, for being here, and always good to have you before a committee. This is a very important issue, and you know the forging of these scripts is something that we've been trying to get a handle on forever, and there clearly is no all-inclusive great decision, or we would have implemented it 10 years ago. And some of these forgeries, I had a pharmacist one time when I was in training as a resident, had this classic script where somebody very ham-handedly tried to get 5 pounds of morphine.
Well.
So you can catch that one, right? But others were, very, very good. And not so much like, counterfeiting a $20 bill, just knowing the system and what people will glance at, and pass through or take a really good look at. They were very deft at that sort of thing. So I do applaud the effort. And as far as the electronic mistakes, older docs, I recently retired, but they kept rolling out. Every time you go to a new system, they'd have a different system for you to use, and it was bewildering. The younger interns and residents coming through sort of picked it up better. But the point you made about, when we tried to reduce prescription errors because, doctors have bad handwriting, all the things that were said, we wound up with more errors because of the bewildering systems that you think you click one box and you really didn't click it. And in a busy day, that's an added burden. Physicians were trained to use charts. They were trained to write prescriptions. Then all of a sudden, the hospital says, you'll use this or you'll perish.
Yeah.
Good to hear that someone is actually bringing up the fact that those things are still out there. And the docs that you want to convert over are probably some of the ones that are going to have those difficulties using that computer system. Do you see that as a problem?
Well, interestingly, the problems that we found were partially because the companies who were selling you those computer systems did not use docs and pharmacists to really evaluate them. We found that the drug names were truncated on your screen. And so it really wasn't the fault of the doc when they clicked on Ampicillin 250 or whatever, because the rest of the term was truncated, it was left off. And so, luckily, I had one of the directors of health in one of my meetings, and he came over and told me in my office Tuesday when he found out how bad it was, and we had some chats with medical, because I was almost to the point of just saying, let's shut the whole thing down till they fix it. But it was not the fault of the doc. It was the fault of the rocket scientists that wrote the software.
Any other questions? Senator Robinchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Boyd. This has been an issue that's been percolating in these rooms for a few years. And what isn't being discussed is the investment we made in ORS years ago. If you recall, we appropriated some money to upgrade that, make that system better. And that system is designed to prevent the abuse and diversion. Has that been effective, and is that kind of working to prevent some of the diversion and abuse that was occurring?
Through the chair, Senator Romanchuk, ORS has definitely been effective. The pharmacists now are used to looking at the patient record, seeing how recently they had received the last one. The prescribers are much better at it because I look at the reports. I attend Board of Pharmacy monthly, and I look at the reports of how much access. When that first started, there was not as much access by the prescriber side, and now there is a lot. I can't give you a percentage. And it's, I think, really helps slow down the number of patients going in and asking their doc for Vicodin or for the other drugs. That's very anecdotal, but, you know, when I look at the reduction in prescribing of the narcotics, part of that is that there's somebody watching, and just that pressure is keeping perhaps someone who has a loose pen or a pharmacist that might fill easily, they're making them slow down.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm just, and I got to give this a little bit more thought. And I'm interested to hear the opponents. I assume there will be some opponents, but if the OAR system is working and doing everything we thought it would do, does it make sense that we force these smaller doctor's offices adopt these kind of systems, especially if they don't have the volume, so they're paying a lot of money for a system and they're only using it for controlled substances from time to time? If the OAR system is working, why do we need to double up and now require, you know, electronic prescribing?
Senator Romanchuk, through the chair, there's actually two problems here, right? You've got the problem of a patient being overprescribed and perhaps going to two or three docs or to three emergency rooms, all kinds of things going on there. Then you have the forgers, okay? And up until my wife sold her pharmacy last year, she was actively calling the South Charleston police on, I'd say, a biweekly basis to have somebody arrested for a forged script. I mean, it was just so common that they would forge a script and try to come. But those are two different problems, if you see what I'm saying. And so this tightens down on the forging for sure. On the prescribing side, it does make it more accurate, as long as they hit the right buttons, but it makes it more accurate. So we're generally in favor. Is there a part of me that has still some concerns? One of the things my wife and I used to do for a $2 fee for Medicaid is wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning to get narcotics for patients dying in the middle of the night for hospice. Not complaining about the $2 fee, but two pharmacists driving a car into a pharmacy and taking 2 hours to make sure somebody's comfortable. I worry about the physician who wrote the script in the middle of the night that we get a hold of, who doesn't have their computer by their bedside, okay? So there's ways around that, but what if they decide, well, it's just too much trouble to. And we do know that in some cases, even cancer docs no longer prescribe narcotics. I talked to a guy that's in a practice of five, and three out of the five no longer prescribe narcotics because they're so afraid of DEA and all the things that go along with it. So we're in favor of the bill. Do I have still a few lurking concerns, possibly?
Any other questions? Senator Antar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if you're in favor of the bill but you have concerns, can you help me? Why are we doing this bill then?
Through the chair, Senator Antar, I feel that the overall win on this is going to be significant for the patient and for the overall system, as long as, and the reason I mentioned that there are reasonable exceptions is that some of the things a couple of you have mentioned today, okay, how do we exempt somebody who doesn't have access to a computer system because their practice can't afford it? Maybe there's something you guys write in. I don't know how you write that, but that's my point there, is that there are some exceptions. I think narcotics in the middle of the night for a hospice patient, it happens, it can happen. If the physician has their prescribing on their phone and it's secure, they can do it. But yes, I have a hard time standing before you and pretending that it's 100%. There are still a few loose things that I'm concerned with.
So I got a couple of questions for you. Ms. Miller alluded that 83% of physicians don't have the ability to do this. And you may not know the exact number, but what's your thoughts? How many of the pharmacists have the electronic ability to accept electronic medical records? Is that a problem?
Mr. Chairman, I would say 100% have the ability because you either do it or you're not getting prescriptions.
My next question is this bill at a state level is mirroring a federal law that's in place to accept Medicaid and Medicare. So these physicians already have to either e-prescribe if they are taking Medicaid and Medicare patients. Explain that, or they're already doing it. Well, most of them are already doing it with the electronic medical records if they're doing Medicaid and Medicare, right?
That is, Mr. Chairman, that is correct, because they would lose payment. We would, I mean, it just is now a requirement. And so it's hard to imagine someone who's prescribing for the older population that is not playing with Medicare and Medicaid in some way. So I'm even surprised at that 82%, but I trust the figures coming out of any CDS and out of retail merchants. So,
another question came up about, and I appreciate your dedication to your patient. There's an exemption in the bill for prescriptions for nursing home residents or hospice care. That would solve that problem, right? If there's an exemption in the bill for those.
Yes.
And there's also an exemption in the bill for prescribers that's prescribed less than 50 Scheduled II controlled substance. That'll probably solve a lot more problems.
Could. I mean, it just depends on your practice, right? So if you've got quite a few patients that end up in the ER or whatever, but you are correct for the low volume people.
Yeah, and I was thinking Senator Thomas's question about fax. Sending a fax doesn't really solve the electronic problem in the sense that forger can still steal a prescription, forge a prescription, and then fax it. I can figure out how to put the wrong phone number change to my phone number and have it falsified and send it to you, because that doesn't seem to would solve the problem.
No. Senator, the most recent problem that I had heard about with faxing was exactly that the pharmacist would look at the fax, it would have the physician's exact fax number. Gee, this must be okay. And no, it was not when the prosecutor came by to chat with the pharmacist. So.
All right. I don't have any other questions. Any other for the committee? None. So thank you very much. That will end the third hearing on Substitute House Bill 193. Next up, the fourth hearing on House Bill 136 regarding chiropractic services. There's no testimony provided. What is the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, motion to favorably report House Bill 136 and recommend for passage and refer to the Committee on Rules and Reference.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion or on this bill before we vote? Seeing none, clerk, will you take the roll?
Chair Huffman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Antoni?
Yes.
Ranking Member Antonio?
Yes.
Senator Johnson?
Yes.
Roegner?
Yes.
Romanchuk?
Yes.
Thomas?
Yes.
Having favorably received the majority of the votes, it will be reported the rules and reference, and I'll ask all the members to sign the sheet before you leave. And that will end the hearing on House Bill 136. Next up, the fourth hearing on Substitute House Bill 37, in-person testimony with Ernie Boyd.
Chairman Huffman, Vice Chair Antoni, Ranking Member Antonio, members of the committee, I'm still Ernest Boyd. Basically, we very much support this. I did have a personal experience over the holiday where my physician took apparently an early Christmas break that I didn't realize. I turned in a refill request in plenty of time on a drug I've been taking for 4 years. Their response to the pharmacist that ended up calling was that he's not available and we're not authorizing it, they took that as a key that they would not do the emergency pill. So I really feel this is very important. I just blew off the drug for a few days. For somebody who really needs diabetic meds, it just became clear to me this bill is going to be very important for them. So again, we very much support this legislation. I'll be glad to take any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That will end the testimony on the fourth hearing. What is the pleasure of the committee? Hold on. Yes. The chair recognizes Senator Antani for an amendment.
Move to amend with AM 2510-1.
The amendment is in order. You want to discuss the amendment or?
The amendment contains a technical amendment from LLC and clarifies the health plan issue that covers a prescription drug under the health benefit plan must provide coverage for that drug if it is dispensed pursuant to the bill's emergency refill dispensing provisions.
Any questions on the amendment? Any objections to the amendment? Seeing no objection to the amendment, the amendment becomes part of the bill. Now, what's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, motion to favorably report and recommend for patch substitute House Bill 37 and refer to the committee on rules and reference.
Any discussion on the bill before we vote? Seeing none, the clerk, will you call the roll?
Chair Huffman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Antoni?
No.
Ranking Member Antonio?
Yes.
Senator Johnson?
Yes.
Rogner?
Yes.
Romanchuk?
Yes.
Thomas?
Having received a majority, the bill will be referred to rules and reference. Members, please sign the sheet before you leave. Is there anything else before the committee? Seeing none, I will make an announcement that we will not have health committee next week, so you can all plan accordingly, but plan to have it the following week, unless again, if I am told by the president there's something of that we need to do in a timely manner. So having said that, health committee is adjourned.